This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
But when does the drinking happen?
It happened before. You missed it.
Oh, yeah. Man, I need to stop showing up late to these recording sessions.
We get crunk. No, we don't.
If by crunk, you mean caffeinated?
Yeah, that is what I mean. Wow, this is an awkward start.
I think it's crunk on human stupidity.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here from the No Bad Ideas HQ, I'm Gabriel Urbina.
I'm Zach Valenti.
I'm Sarah Shackett.
And we are your hosts for this lovely, lovely program. And if you've never listened to it before, basically what we do is every week one of us finds a example of something that somebody did that was, ill-advised or
foolhardy, perhaps
underthought out,
super silly,
just something that makes you go, oh boy, that's a bad idea. And then we have 30 minutes to turn it into a good story, to come up with the pitch for how you might make a good movie or a good novel or a good play or a good anything really out of that bad idea that somebody had.
And this week is exciting because
we're doing something different this
week. I know,
week.
It is slight break in the formula that Gabriel just explained. We have our very first sponsored bad idea. Some lovely listeners wrote to us with an idea that they found on the internet that they thought the three of us would enjoy, or that they would enjoy us suffering over. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. So thank you to Marcy Sierra, Chuck the Bard, and The Empty Man, who sent this idea in to us, and we are going to do it. There is only one person in the world besides these folks who knows what this idea is. Our reader checked it out, and so none of us gave
the thumbs up, told us nothing else.
Nothing else. So I'm going to read the idea, and it will be the first time that I am seeing it and the first time that these two gentlemen near me are hearing it.
Oh, God.
And we will go from there. So we'll see if this works.
Before you read this, are you telling me that the empty man has finally cometh? And it's a bad idea?
I mean, it's in character, right?
But
That was a Wolf 359 joke.
Yeah, that was what I was about to say. If you didn't get that joke, listen to Wolf 359.
Okay, so this idea from the lovely pop-up that immediately loaded on the page is from Gizmodo. Specifically, IO9.
Okay.
Our friends at IO9. And
I'm
are
worried.
They still going to be our friends after this?
Maybe.
Oh, no.
So the headline...
I don't think this is going to be a super
the
silly
headline
one,
of this story. Oh... Christmas has come early to me. Man attacks car with sword in attempt to slay the Dark Lord Morgoth.
I see.
Yes.
What?
This is Morgoth, like, not from Lord of the Rings.
No, it's from the Silmarillion.
But from the prequel historical appendices.
Indeed.
To the Lord of the Rings.
The Dark Lord Morgoth. The original.
The OG.
Dark, right. Sauron was one of his servants before he got all uppity and became a giant eye. Anyway, yeah. we will
be
link
nice to the intern. You just never
actually
know.
Yeah,
this is true.
You never know who's going to be tomorrow's Dark Lord.
After Beleriand sinks, where are you going to be? Anyway.
Oh, man.
We will link to this article in the description of the episode, so you can see this very disturbing image of a bunch of EMTs surrounding a car that looking at right now. It's filed under crime. Let's go onward.
Oh, Christ.
A Portland, Oregon man dressed in chainmail and calling himself a, quote, high elf, and unquote.
Oh, no!
Claimed to be vanquishing the Dark Lord Morgoth when he stabbed a woman's car with a sword. It probably won't surprise you to learn.
The car in motion?
I don't know. It probably won't surprise you to learn that this J.R.R. Tolkien fan took LSD shortly before he... I love this sentence. He took LSD shortly before he decided to slay a sedan.
So was he a high elf?
Yes.
Or just a high elf?
I mean... We'll get into it. What's great is that despite this high elf's state of mind, he managed to reference a pretty obscure figure in Tolkien lore. Morgoth is mostly described in the Silmarillion. No one was hurt in his sword fight other than the car and the pride of high elves everywhere. In the picture above, you can see the high elf sitting on the ground in his helmet and armor. Apparently, he was also carrying his trusty staff and shield. Eventually, police him onto a stretcher and took him to a hospital for treatment. That is the end of the story. The world is our oyster.
Oh, my God. Jesus.
I am going to set a timer.
Yeah, please do.
Take that, eighth grade English, thinking I would never get anything out of reading the Silmarillion.
Wow.
I mean, I think that if anything, this article is a very good example of why you shouldn't read the Silmarillion.
Well, you shouldn't take LSD.
And then read the Silmarillion?
Like, you can do one or the other. You can take LSD or read the Silmarillion, but not both.
Right.
30-minute timer starting now.
Certain medicines have labels that are sort of going, do not operate heavy machinery or read, like, or obscure read, Tolkien historiana.
Right, obscure high fantasy. Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Thank you, all of you, especially Marcy, who was the one who contacted us. This is delightful. I could not be more pleased.
Seriously.
Yeah, and I could not be more...
I mean, it's a full story,
baffled,
as is.
Dumped.
Right.
Overwhelmed.
So we just need to, like, build up the context around the crazy incident or, like, what happens to his life from here on out.
There's a lot of different ways we could go.
Yeah.
It's very Don Quixote de la Mancha.
A little bit, yeah.
Like, a lot of ways.
Right. We could go totally
down to the chainmail
off the radar and just, like open on an elf waking up in a human hospital that's just, like what? Where's my kingdom? And it's just like, are they an elf? Are they a crazy person?
The audience can see them in their elven form. And when you have like POV shots from the humans, it looks like a normal dude.
Or when they walk past the mirror, yeah.
Yeah.
Could be that, or it could be really obvious that they are a creature from another dimension or, you know, another land. So there's sort of that direction where we can just like
that's
leave.
That's true. Although I really like that section of Thor and I don't want to screw with it.
Oh, that's funny. And then I am still not over the OG Dark Lord versus the intern. Just like, and then like one day the intern is the new the new boss. And then just like what happens at evil water cooler.
That's not quite how it went down, but that's okay.
I know. I'm just like that idea sort of
inspired something.
Some like The Office, but everybody's an orc or a dark lord.
Like,
or...
Man, I really wish I was nice to him. Pam in accounting, she was really kind when he was kind of a doofus.
Now she's the mouth of Sauron. I mean,
that really funny commentary was made just as I was taking a sip of tea and we almost had an accident in the studio.
I'm sorry. The timing on that was not great. So we could go sort of into Silmarillion land or stay in Portland.
The only place that is weirder than Silmarillion land.
This is true.
I love you, Portland.
Gondolin has nothing on Portland. and I'm kind of inclined towards the latter. Just because I think I think it would be interesting to like open on this incident and see how it either derails or like catalyzes this dude's life in some way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure how, I'm not quite sure where it goes. But I just like the idea of, you know, suddenly you're known as the dude who stabbed a woman's sedan. Or she's a huge Tolkien fan, and that's a meet cute.
Wow.
Kids these days. Sorry. Gabriel.
I don't like the idea of kind of going to a Fisher King or Don Quixote place of this is someone that is having a break from reality and he is seeing the a world, giant where there's a windmill.
No, I don't. And that's not necessarily what I was thinking.
No. Yeah. That is absolutely not what you were suggesting. I'm just more than things to put on the table right now. I'm
right, to take
kind
off.
Of feeling things that I don't want to go near. And nice. I sort of would like to avoid kind of ending up in a place of
yeah.
This is just sort of someone that is seeing this grand, epic, fantasy, romantic version of their life.
Yeah.
And the entire movie is kind of his close friends and family first being afraid for their lives with this madman.
And then sparked with wonder. And
kind of, realize, like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, that's fine. I think The Fisher King does that, and it exists, and it's, if you haven't seen that movie, it's wonderful.
I can't tell you how helpful it is to just, like, take things, just keep taking things off the table.
Great. Right. Right. Like, I think the closest we can get to that is putting this in more of a Buffy place, where, like, this person really is half-elven or something, and, like, there really was a demon that was possessing this car. But, you know, to the muggles on the outside, it doesn't appear that way, or, you know, there's this sort of, even if it's very loose, but this unspoken line between the supernatural world and the world that most people live in.
Totally.
Right. I also could see a stoner comedy angle where this high elf is running around being like, saved you, muggle asses.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, sure, man. And meanwhile, like, actually, like,
I would love to tell the story of a high elf, like, in a high fantasy setting. Like,
but he's, like, really a low elf socially, but he's always high. And
or no, like, he's just an elf, but, like, lives okay. in Waterdeep or wherever. But is just high all the time. I think that strikes me as funny, but, like, I don't know if there's anything more to that.
You know what it could be? So have you guys seen, I know you have, Sarah, have you seen What We Do in the Shadows, the documentary?
I think I went and,
or the mockumentary? Did you see it with a,
No, I saw Wild Tales with you.
Yes.
But I saw What We Do in the Shadows at the same theater. That's why.
I saw the trailer. It's been on my to-watch list for too long.
Oh, Zach, you're going to love it so much.
This movie.
So for anybody that doesn't know anything about What We Do in the Shadows, highly recommended movie. And the joke of it is that it is a mockumentary about four vampires
who live as roommates
in modern day, I want to say Wellington?
Yeah, it's Wellington. Is it Wellington or is it? I think it's Wellington.
And kind of about how these super powerful 300-year-old beings kind of have to interact with modernity and right. also with the problems that come from
being
roommates more yes. than vampires, really.
Right. And it really treats, except for like a tiff with the rival gang of werewolves, the supernatural part of them. As quotidian and as mundane and as, you know, part of what makes them funny losers more than any, more than fear or any power, although they are powerful.
So you could use a similar setup to go in one of two directions. So one is the version of it where it's a couple of elves that live together in secrecy. But because they're still elves and they are connected to the magical compact of
right.
the moon and the stars and the crescent whatever.
The silver tides.
Exactly.
And so on and so on.
They need to do certain things every so often as elves. And one of them is, you know, they have to enact these feats of heroism and these feats of chivalry and these feats of, you know, sort of like daring knighthood.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've kind of figured out, like, you know, like, you don't actually have to, like, do a lot. If you just kind of, like, earn the right place in the right time and say the right things, you can kind of get away with a lot, and that will, like, check off the box.
Oh, man. And I would love to play with, like, the notions of chivalry changing over time. Like, it used to be that you had to go out and slay a beast. And,
right.
But now you can just, like...
retweet the right person. Sorry.
Yeah. No, but that's where I was going. Like, be nice to someone on the internet, or, like, not post a mean tweet or something like that.
And so that's one way to go through if we want to follow up that setup of just kind of one of them was like, well, it's my time of the decade. So like straps on a sword and very half-heartedly is like, alack, evil Morgoth, your time has come. Stab, stab, stab. Ooh, heroism.
Right.
Or someone who is a lover of fantasy and sci-fi discovers kind of a hidden community of elves.
Right, and tries to prove themselves to work their way in.
Right, yeah. And everyone is kind of like, no, stop, like, put the sword down. Like, holy shit, Jeremy, like, this is not the way to do this. Just, like, chill, my dude.
Whatever happens, our protagonist's name is Jeremy, that's canon. What do you think of those two?
So, just to sum up and see, I guess the one that I heard that I'm more interested in is the roommates of roommates of elves. Like, just like there happens to be an apartment. Are you thinking 3, 4, 5?
I was less thinking the roommate angle and more the just kind of like these people who are beings of fantasy now living in a modern setting, but they could be roommates.
They could be. And the reason that I would stray from that a little bit is because that's so centered on what we do in the shadows. Like,
Right. We don't want to just copy that.
Yeah. But it's elves. It's different from vampires.
Well, it is.
It is. Yeah. So we could, but what fascinated you about the roommate angle?
Well, you asked me which of, like, the two ideas did I like, and I think I lost the thread on which concrete ideas.
Well, so one of them was we center the story on these supernatural beings, these elves who live for hundreds and hundreds of years and are high fantasy, like hiding their... they're living in the modern world now, hiding in plain sight.
And probably have... eternal youth, eternal beauty, eternal grace, eternal...
Yes, Legolas.
Yes.
And every so often they're called to preserve the cycle of the world by enacting feats of heroism, or there is something that they are here to do in order to preserve both their kindred and the fate of humanity and whatever. Mm-hmm.
But now they are really half-assing it.
But now they live in the modern world. And so, like, that's changed their outlook, their everything, the way that they understand heroism. And they're probably very disgruntled. And so that's one story, is telling the story of these beings who have to sort of contend with modern human life while still being bound by these ancient codes of fantasy rules.
Okay.
Idea number two is that someone, a huge nerd, not that we know any of those, discovers that there's a community of elves, that elves are real, they live hidden amongst us, and this person tries to gain entry and become worthy of inclusion in this sort of hidden fantasy world. And they probably start by like trying to slay the Dark Lord Morgoth and ending up like running a sword through some woman's car.
Right,
but that is
one
incident on their journey to either joining the elves or
one of the cops on the scene is like, meet me at 7 and like, don't bring that stupid sword. And then like, thus they enter the
They either enter the world or they, you know, sort of find a niche for themselves in the human world. Mm-hmm. So that's idea number two. And it just is like, who are we following? Are we following a supernatural being? Or are we following
a human trying to get? Yeah. I like the supernatural being angle.
Okay.
I like the jaded, like sort of like, put upon elf. I think there's something inherently funny in the double entendre pun of like, they were previously like a king and now they're just like stoned all the time to make it through the day. They're just like, fuck mm-hmm. this. Like LA is like, you know, like hell, but like, I got to live here. Cause it's where my publicist needs me to like respond to all the, you know, like,
yeah. And also like Lord I of the have Rings to keep the San Andreas fault together. Kind
right,
of
right. Exactly. Like, you know, they sort of like, would they live publicly is I guess my question. Cause I would want like
in Gabriel's original conception. No. Correct.
Yeah.
Cause
yeah.
I think I went to a, what's that animated
Bojack Horseman
place of like, right. Like, man, the Lord of the Rings was great, but now I live in public and people see I'm not aging and I got to like figure out how to stage my death again. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, just like, being an elf,
we just lean in into it, and Paul Rudd is terrible because he doesn't age. Anyway,
one moment. If they are out in public as elves, why do they need to fake their death?
Well, are they out as public as elves, or are they just out as out in public? And
like out in public, you meant like just like walking about in the streets, not like,
well, they could be a public figure. Like, I think there's a lot of different
okay.
possibilities that I'm not settled on.
But okay. Okay.
I'm just sort of mining for possibilities.
Sure. Sure.
I have a job. We have 15 minutes.
Okay.
Okay. Cool.
Which is so much time to mine possibilities.
Yeah.
Like, right. Like, I think there's a world where like, everybody knows they're an elf and they're also famous.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're famous because they're an elf and it's like this acknowledgement of magic and they have to like show up in Times Square and do that stupid thing every New Year's for the, you know, for the tourists.
Mm-hmm.
Like, doesn't even really matter anymore because you can just like retweet to get the good karma going.
Cool. And in that world, are we still trying to incorporate kind of this attack on that car or an attack on something public?
Yeah, or some sort of misunderstanding about magic or... This is why I was slightly drawn to the human angle.
Mm-hmm.
Just because... Although... Oh, man, they're both good.
I'm not attached to this. Like, we can go the human angle if you guys want to stick closer to the inspiring idea. And that's something that you want to explore.
I'm mostly still trying to feel my way around both. Like,
yeah.
I'm,
yeah.
So, and yeah, kind of my, and I guess like the question is the conflict of what we're trying to put together still one person is going after the Dark Lord Morgoth, whether that is a real Dark Lord or not.
Right.
Regardless of whether they are a famous elf living in a semi-public sphere or kind of a young boy trying to prove his mettle into kind of this like secret enclave society, or are we more interested in the... in sort of looking for conflict in just the situation of being this like older being living amongst
this
inner
is,
society.
Yeah, what I'm trying to tease out, because I think one story, what excites me about sort of following elves in the modern world is that gives you sort of a slightly twisted mirror to reflect back ideas about, you know, how tough it is to sort of define yourself in this noisy internet age, and you know what notions of heroism and of purpose even are now, and you know you can sort of look at sort of how things have changed for better and for worse if you have someone who has the perspective of millennia. And like, that's all very exciting. If you are working with a sort of younger, a human protagonist who really, really wants an ideal, but then is confronted with that ideal, and it's different from what they expect. You know, I assume that, like, the elves in story B would also probably be, like, a little bit chiller and a little bit disaffected. And that's when you can sort of have a story that tackles, like, issues of fandom and growing up and, like, finding your place in the world. And, you know, what are the qualities and what are the people and the, you know, sort of setting in which you feel special. And so they're like two different branches, and I like both of them a lot, but it just sort of depends on, like, what tensions, what kinds of stories we'd be interested in telling with all of this fantasy baggage.
And I think I am very attracted to sort of this idea of how do you translate kind of fantasy magicalness into kind of modern celebrity. What I'm still not kind of perceiving there is what is the conflict, or sort of what is the,
sure,
the
is
problem
there,
that they're trying to
Lord
face or solve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. Because sure. that is also where my interest is sort of going. As far as conflict goes, do we want to go with Morgoth? Like, is that an option?
We probably can't for estate reasons.
Yeah, right.
But that's a generic Dark Lord, sure. The other option is like something that's a little bit closer to the elves level, like orcs and that sort of thing. The other option is to go to like a Good Omens place and have like dark elves who are equally bored and equally like just trying to get by in the modern world.
Sure. But okay, but you know, but sort of is it you know, what I'm trying to, I guess, zero in on is it that there's a group of evil people, be the Dark Lord or the orcs or
whoever's
Morlocks or whoever, that are trying to say, like, open up the gates of hell and unleash, like, you know, terror on earth, and that is going to lead to the apocalypse? Or is it going to be that they're gunning for the same commercial that our protagonist is,
oh sure,
you know, like trying to get cast in? Kind of what scope of story is the sort of more fantasy as celebrity aimed at?
Interesting. If like we're living in sort of a more BoJack Horseman style universe, where regardless of whether it's known that there are elves and magic is real or not, these are people who are out in the world and are trying to like make a name for themselves. They're not like hidden or, you know, stoners who are just trying to get by. Then the goal should be something that is more earthly. It should be they're trying to save the coffee shop where they hang out, or you know, they're gunning for the commercial with this drow who's has much more commercial work under their belt or whatever, rather than an apocalypse.
Sure. Who's the main character? Like, who is the story following, or like, who are we centered on?
The last high elf.
And actually, that is a good question. Is there one single elf left, or is it?
Or is it a group?
A community of people.
I think that's just a choice. We can tell a story like this with or without sort of a group of them.
Yeah. What do you think, Zach? In sort of the conception of it, where this person is kind of you know, what you were talking about before of kind of, I hate living in LA, but like my publicist, you know, thinks that that's the best place to be. Does that fit more with sort of there being only one elf left in existence or with more of them?
I think it's totally disconnected. Like they're independent variables.
Okay.
So if we wanted there to be multiple elves, I think regardless, there should be something different about this elf. Like I like the idea of like them dealing with like their status as a royal, like from the elven world, and like sort of the differences, both maybe for good and for terrible, of being famous in our modern world. You know, maybe like don't have to fake wave from the garden every morning. That's a plus. But like also can't go to Starbucks, you know, like, you know.
Right. Like, it could be that like this is sort of like I'm just going to arbitrarily say that like elves have a Rumspringa where they go out into the human world for a bit and hang out and decide whether they want to stay there or whether they want to go back and sort of be guardians of the forest and the clouds and the sea or whatever. And so this is, we are now in the modern world. So this royal elf who is out on his, you know, 50 year sabbatical or whatever is famous, but is, you know, just trying to like live life and just wants to like get high and play Call of Duty a little bit and just like do the thing. And, you know, then they could sort of navigate like trying to be a celebrity, trying to do something in the human world before their time runs out and they have to either go back to the elven world or stay in the human world forever.
And I think along these lines, the thing that they could be trying to do is sort of something that is like, I'm trying to put on, say, a play that is a good play because it speaks to these themes that I find important, not because I am Thranduil the Fourth, you know, like last champion of light and beauty and grace. And ah, shut up with all that shit. Like, no elf stuff. I just want this to be like a story about, like, you know, these two guys in a cottage in Newfoundland that are trying to deal with the death of their father. And, you know, and everyone is kind of going like, but like, maybe like you put some dragons in there and then like, you know,
no!
Like,
no dragons.
Right.
This is the O'Neill Festival.
Right. And then it sort of becomes the story about like, can I be famous for something that I did and something
rather
that I created?
Rather than something that I am.
Right. Rather than something that got like handed on down to me.
And one would imagine in that case that, you know, this this person would have to both like be able to articulate something that is that only they could do and also come to terms with their family and where they came from.
Right. And also probably like it would have to do a lot with kind of their psychology of like, can I even do this? Like my entire life, I've had things handed down to me. And this is now something that I want to do, but in doing that, I need to face up to, is it even something that I can do, that
good
I am
thing
capable?
They've got a Scooby gang of humans around them to help them out.
But like the Scooby gang is probably different levels of efficaciousness. Like there's probably like a genuine friend that is their genuine friend. But then there's probably also like their...
And I would think that like the, you know, getting high and seeing Morgoth as a car would end up like opening them up to, if that's still a thing that happens in this, to meeting people who don't care about their elvenness or their elven royaltyness. Like, probably at the start, yes, I agree with you. That they would have, you know, a squad, right? That, like
part I'm of- hearing, like, a little entourage vibes.
But, like, if all of, like, if the entire entourage was, like, even more sycophantic than the entourage
already is. Right, like, that's where it starts. And I think if that's all that this person has access to, then the answer to can they do something that is wholly of them is no. But I'm more interested, I think, in them sort of learning to find genuine friendships And that being part of what helps them do whatever the goal that they're after. We have a minute and 43 seconds to figure out what that is. Sorry, guys.
Okay, so let us put some stuff together.
Yes.
So, Elf lives in this sort of semi-public sphere of fame, or like fame, or like public sphere of semi-fame.
I would probably say like Chris Evans famous, right? Like walking around might be noticed, but if they're wearing a black baseball cap, maybe not.
But only famous because they're the prince of high elves of whatever.
Who is here visiting the mortal world for like 100 years and then they have to go back or whatever.
Sure. Spend most of their time drunk and or high as F.
playing Xbox.
Makes all their money from like endorsement deals or like commercials, that kind of stuff.
right.
Has like 14 million followers on Twitter. Has like perhaps one genuine friend and then a squad of like sycophantic yes people.
Right.
That like they continually tell them that they're the best person ever. Have been doing this for like, I don't know, 75 years. Is now kind of like thinking about like, or no, probably done for like 99 years. This is his last year on Earth.
Right.
Before he goes back to wherever he came from.
Yes.
He's like, I need to do something of importance while I'm still here. Keeps putting it off until this one incident where he does LSD with his genuine friend and they go and attack this car, which makes maybe his friend realize like, you have some like something that you need to get out of your system.
And yeah,
like,
man.
Like that, like something came out of you there. Like you were trying to make a difference. You were trying to save something, and I think that it was yourself, which makes our man realize that he needs to do something and that is going to be great and he's going to overcome and it's going to be awesome. What a good movie. Credits. Yay.
boy. That was if in case you didn't know, listeners, Gabriel was speaking so fast because my timer went off.
No, that's just the pace of the movie. It just
books out.
Yeah.
First act.
Right. Once you hit that third midpoint, this motherfucker takes off, man.
Like a train. Well, that's the start of something, guys.
Yay.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Thank you all of you again for that delightful idea. I did not expect that we would be talking about Morgoth today.
Surprises all around. And we'll have some more surprises for you right after the break.
All right, we are going to stop the show arbitrarily for just a moment. There's a couple quick things we want to let y'all know about. The first is that you too have incredible power within you to sponsor an episode of the show. If you liked what you just heard and you find a bad idea on the internet and you would like to bring it to us, to turn it into a high elf of some sort, you can do that. Go to nobadideaspodcast.com/sponsor. Again, that's nobadideaspodcast.com/sponsor. And that page will take you where you need to go and get you set up to email us and we can get going on maybe making your idea part of the show. That would be so cool. I would be excited for that. I can't speak for the other two. But yes, sponsor an episode. You can do that thing. Other quick announcement is that we are just painfully close to our Patreon goal of having to start writing a script, a full-length movie script that's based on one of these bad idea story pitches. So please check us out on Patreon. You can go to nobadideaspodcast.com/support. Different from sponsor, nobadideaspodcast.com/support. And help us write a really ridiculous script. There's all sorts of rewards and fun things over on Patreon. You know what Patreon is. You've heard us talk about it. Go check us out. Put us over the line. We'd be very grateful and you'd get a fun story out of it. Everybody wins. Okay, that's enough of me. Let us go back to the back half of the show now.
welcome back, everybody. It's great to be here for the second half of the show, where we have a less structured conversation about life.
If that's even creativity. Possible. It's less possible to be less structured than the first half.
Oh, we make it possible.
Watch me.
No.
So I think you might have some trouble seeing this, dear listeners, but I have this beautiful bracelet on that says participate, observe, describe accurately, which is the definition of mindfulness that my therapist gave me.
So if you are sitting at home, just close your eyes and visualize this. Don't do this if you're driving a car, for God's sakes.
Nope. You should participate in driving safely on the road.
My girlfriend Charlotte gave me this beautiful bracelet, and so I have this the remembrance of this definition. And to describe accurately, I feel like I have been obsessed a little bit, or like... I feel like I've been on a tear in my media consumption.
Okay.
In a way that feels more focused than it previously has. I would say that in the past I would maybe binge more like fiction shows and things, but recently I've just been diving headlong into these long form interviews and like sort of talks, and it's started with listening to Krishnamurti and some of these other Jiddu Krishnamurti, who's got this crazy life story. I think I may have shared it once on this show. But there's like a bunch of other people that I've sort of like fallen into rabbit holes of.
Mm-hmm.
Having come off the other day, a bunch of videos of Neal Stephenson, and just seeing how like ideas and themes and perspectives that, you know, he brings sort of relate to all the other things I've been thinking about. I just noticed, like, in observing myself, how single-minded my discretionary viewing and listening time has become. And I'm just curious, like, what your guys' relationship to research and obsession and I guess just media consumption is like these days. And have you ever gone through periods of like feeling particularly focused? And I don't know, I guess the last component to this that I'd offer up on the table in the spirit of starting out the conversation is this tension in me to like want to like share all the like little clips that I find, versus feeling like I'm like spamming people, or like maybe even like it should just be for me, or like, why can't it just be for me? Why does it have to be about like bringing something to others?
Interesting.
I know that just like put a whole like cat barf on the table of like what we could talk about.
And before we start talking about it, I'm curious about something, because you said a very interesting word in the middle of the cat barf, the big O word.
Obsession. Yeah.
And I guess before we sort of dive into all that, I'd be curious about when you think of obsession, where does that begin? Like, where is, like, how
is
do
it
we...
is it more about habit? Is it more about,
I think
like...
it's more about passion.
Okay. Good stereo. But anyway, sort of like, where do you go from... this is something that I really, really like. I really like the operatic compositions of Verdi, too. I'm obsessed with Verdi. Like, sort of like, where is that line for you guys?
I think it just is a matter of, like, daily thought, or, like, daily life. Like if it shows up on a weekly, monthly basis, it doesn't quite have the same intensity that I would associate with what I might call obsession.
Okay.
Which is a little bit more like, you know, I wake up and it's like on my mind, or like I'm like, you know, on a daily basis, it sort of arises.
What about you, Sarah? When you think obsession, like where
does that sort of...
where's the line in the sand?
Sure. Between liking something, or... you know, even engaging daily with something and being obsessed. it's gonna sound weird, but like the things that I get obsessed with, like I live there, you know, it becomes a lens through which I look at everything else in my life and in the world. And you know, not only is it something that I engage with in a really passionate, sustained, and you know, using multiple parts of my brain, both the like dumb pleasure center and also more critical thought. But it's obsessions are also things that I start seeing everywhere and seeing in me and in other works that I interact with. It, you know, they're the things that just become part of like the lenses through which I see life. That is where I draw the line. And this is because I think for me, I tend to have my obsessions are few, but they're long running. You know, I tend to have obsessions that last for years and years and years, and they burn brighter and they burn colder. But, you know, I felt like I've had, you know, only a handful, and they've basically taken up whole stages of my life. I don't know if any of that makes sense.
No, it makes a lot of sense. I think that those are two really, really good explanations. In fact, I think that those are the only explanations that we need, and we can just move ahead right into the conversation without anyone else having
Let's
to define
Let's begin that conversation
anything.
With you, Gabriel. That How do you break. Define obsession?
Yeah. We're not getting into this car until you...
No, since I... played that dirty, dirty, rotten trick and gave myself a lovely, nice time to think while you guys gave your very salient explanations for where obsession begins. I had time to have a think about it, and I came up with something that I think is going to sound real hippy-dippy.
No, totally.
But, like, bear with me.
Is it worse than I live there?
It might be.
Okay.
But it's in similar territory. I don't think there's anything wrong with I live there. No, but like, I think that for me, the point at which I kind of go, okay, I think that I'm now obsessed with this, is when whatever it is that I'm obsessed with is present in my brain without me summoning it, or without me kind of making an effort of memory to find it. Like, for example, if I see a movie in theaters, and after the movie is over, I kind of want to go, well, how does this movie relate to the works of, let's say, Peter Bogdanovich, another film director, someone that I'm not obsessed with. I need to kind of do a little bit of mental effort to kind of go, like, what did Bogdanovich direct? What did he make? It's this, that, and the other. I'm going to like grab those things and compare them. But there's sort of this like real effort and this real kind of spinning of the hard drive.
You're aware of yourself doing the math.
To make that happen.
Okay.
Whereas chances are that if I see that movie, if there's anything in my brain that is going to connect it at all to, say, the works of Joss Whedon or Stephen Sondheim, both people that I'm profoundly obsessed with, there's no effort. Like, it's just going to turn up there immediately. And it is going to be, I'm going to summon forth the connection before I'm even aware of myself doing it. And I'm going to start to see things, kind of what you were saying, Sarah, through a lens of the things that I am obsessed with. And it's to the point of, like, I can't help it. It's not that I'm kind of going, let me turn on Sondheim vision for, you know, this thing that I'm going to see. It is that I kind of don't know how to turn off Sondheim vision.
Right. It's so ingrained now into just you.
Yeah.
I love that you're like the Terminator, but instead of being like has weapon, it's
like really depressing musicals from the 70s and 80s. Yeah, no, that's kind of kind of a great summary of my life and my like worldview.
That tracks.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So with that little bit of technicality out of the way, yeah. So let's talk about media consumption and sort of obsession and how that, you know, sort of how that goes. And I think that there are, I don't know, like, I think that there's kind of short-term and long-term obsessions for me in my life. I remember there was a point in my, when I was in college, I think this must have been my senior year in college, I was made aware of a couple of stories about early 20th century stage magicians, kind of Houdini and his contemporaries and people that were slightly older than them. And if you've never looked into that history, it is wild. It is a like Game of Thrones-esque like series of like betrayals and one-upmanship and, you know, amazingness all folded into like this like beautiful art form that was both incredibly showy but also like very engineered and very scientific in some ways. And I sort of remember I kind of went, oh my God, like I can't believe that there aren't more fictional stories told about this. And I spent like the next 6 months reading biographies on those dudes, and I spent the next 6 months kind of reading up on everything that they've done, reading books about stagecraft. And it was sort of something that came out of this place of, I am really, really curious about whether there is a story that can be told here and a script to be written. And eventually I got to the point where I sort of told myself, if there is, I'm not ready to write it yet. Like it is, I kind of need to mature a little bit. I kind of need to be in a place where I could do a lot more research into all of the things about this era that don't obsess me. Like it kind of became clear at a certain point that I would need to read a couple of books about Prohibition in order to be able to tell that story.
You probably know a lot more about vaudeville than you do.
That's right. Yeah. None of which were things that grabbed me. And so there kind of became a point where I had kind of tapped out all the resources that I had for the obsession. In order to keep chasing the obsession, I would have had to translate it, do it into things that translate into, no, this is now work. Like this is, you're no longer having fun reading this book. You are now doing homework. You are now doing research in order to be able to do something. And that is kind of where that obsession got put on pause, and it hasn't been taken off pause because I haven't kind of found myself able to go, ah, look, here's those nice 6 months that I could use to go into all of the things about the subject that I am no longer
fascinated by.
Sounds like
you rode the wave, and then the wave waved.
Right.
Like, but at a certain point, the swell comes to its end.
Your thoughts about stage magicians and some of the stories and some of the conflicts between these people have come up in other things that we've done and informed choices that we've made in space.
Yes.
Among other places. So it's like, that's to me what qualifies it as a good obsession, is because like it hasn't complete, you know, it wasn't like this show you binged and then put it away.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's still, it comes up every now and again.
Right. It wasn't a gap in your mental resume where
right.
you just went blank for like 6 months on a hole on something that was useless. Like in many ways it was like, sort of a force of nature of effort that was not effortful.
Mm-hmm. I think that sounds more or less correct. Yes.
Nice.
Huh. Cool.
Let's go back to the original barf. Like kind of what were the rest of the questions?
I'm glad that stuck.
In that melange of thought.
I guess the other thing that I'd be curious your perspective on that I feel like I've been grappling with is this sense of pressure that I put on myself to publish. And to, like, I think that personally, like, to, I guess to answer the, like, I don't know if you guys feel a pressure to publish, and I'd be curious about that. For me, I think it's mostly conditioning that I've had, and seeing the rise of various people on social media come through very regular, almost punishing publishing schedules with very little time for preparation. I think now I'm seeing another side on YouTube of people taking a lot of time offline to produce longer form things that people are also engaging with. So yeah, I just feel like I'm like sort of waking up to something I was blind to around just how much pressure I was putting on myself to publish like really regularly.
Do you think that pressure is like feeding some of these YouTube rabbit holes that you go down, or are you, is that separate from how you experience obsession?
I think the YouTube rabbit holes are a new, like, I think it's disconnected from that pressure to share, okay. But I think that pressure to share is like raising its ugly head around it, being like, is there anything that we could share here? Is there anything that we, and it's like, no, bro, like, chill out. Like,
right.
We're just at the beginning of this roller coaster, and like, who cares if it doesn't land us in a publishable place? Like, it's interesting.
Hmm.
But then there's still that like shitty, cracked out, squirrely voice that like, is like, but where, you know, where's the Daily Show? Where's the, you know, where's the weekly upload? Where's the, you know, like if you're not doing it more regularly and consistently and it's not like feeding growth, is it worth anything? I think is like the anxiety.
Yeah, I'm not going to be of much use here because I kind of often like, I have to force myself to be on Twitter a lot of the time, and I have to kind of force myself to like, I oftentimes sort of like draft tweets about kind of like, oh, I found this like interesting read, and like this could be something that like you guys get something out of. 19 times out of 20 I delete those because the voice in my head is the voice of like, why are you publishing this? Why would anyone care about hearing this from you? Like, why do you need to tell this to anyone? You don't. Cut it out. Like that is kind of like the voice that I have to wrestle with in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it's, I just read a great book about cats and witchcraft and bouncy balls, and I happen to know that Sarah is an aficionado of cats and witchcraft and bouncing balls.
Sure.
As she is.
I love all three.
You can bet your ass that I'm getting on the phone and being like, oh my God, Sarah, you need to read this book right now. In fact, I'm coming over to your apartment to give it to you.
Right.
But that is different because there is kind of a relationship and there is kind of a...
It doesn't feel like, you know, standing up on a soapbox in front of a crowd.
Yeah. And I think that now there's kind of this very... Like, what makes it even harder for me is that there is kind of this like very real pressure of you have to stand by the objects of your obsessions. And you know, and if you are, I'm just gonna make someone up, like if you are obsessed with some performance artist called Sammy Smith and Sammy Smith says something real dumb when he does an interview, then all of a sudden, you know, the next time that you post one of those like Sammy Smith's works that are amazing and fantastic and that you've loved for years, all of a sudden standing on the soapbox is an invitation to make, to invite people to ask that you answer for the things that Sammy Smith did. And you know, Lord knows that like a lot of the people on my obsessions list are what you would call problematic faves. And we could do another show another time about kind
problematic
of...
Problematic faves.
Yeah.
Yeah, and sort of about how do you reconcile kind of this idea of, I see the problem in this thing, and that is never what I've gotten out of it.
Mm.
Like, it takes some real effort of perspective to be able to see this thing that is unquestionably there, but I just respond so much to these other things, and my brain just gloms onto them so completely. And it's so just kind of like define the architecture of my thought processes around certain things that I don't, even if I'm willing to be rid of the person, I don't know if I'm willing to be rid of the obsession or if I'm even able to do that.
Right.
Conversation for a different day. But kind of the awareness that we are having this like big wide conversation on that level makes me all the more hesitant to kind of be broadcasting things regularly if they're not things that are content generated by me in which I'm ready to kind of be like, yes, I can stand and completely and authoritatively talk about what I thought was going on here when this was created.
Yeah, I have to, I'm similar-ish, unless, you know, it's a piece that I think really, really, really strikes a chord. Sometimes I share those, but I don't know. I've jumped right to guilt. There's no pressure. There's just sadness yeah. that I'm a failure at sharing things and being on the internet effectively. So, and you know, I think I am shaped by the fact that for much of my life, my obsessions were intensely private.
Same here. Yeah.
And not something that I got a lot out of interacting with other people about. So again, like the moment I read the book on dogs and warlocks and bouncy castles, then Gabriel gets a text immediately. But yeah, I sort of don't have that pressure in my head while I'm experiencing something to be like, oh, I got to share that. Unless it's some, you know, someone I know. Who I know will get a lot out of that thing.
No, and I think that you're right, and that like at this point in my life, I feel that my interests and the things that I like are the most mainstream that they've ever been. I was like,
it's really weird.
Yeah. I was like the kid in elementary school that liked all the shows that none of the other kids liked. And nobody was ever
up on Friends.
Yeah, and was sort of just like forget like even like having someone to talk to about this. I would like, it was one of those things where like I can't express my fandom for this because it will invite ridicule. So this is like, these things that you love are things that you keep the fuck to yourself.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same. And it's so bizarre now. Like after you know, years and years and years and years of being peripherally aware of like D&D, and now everybody's fucking playing D&D.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, what?
Thank you, happened? Adventure Zone.
I know. Like, where was this when I was 14? Come on, guys.
Wow. To be 14 now. Different world.
Assuredly so. But yeah, was there more to that question, Zach? Do we want to pivot to a different question?
Yeah, like basically, like I don't know that we can be of much help with your particular dilemma on that front. Sorry, Zach.
That was great, you guys. I guess the thing that I'm still curious about that with this pressure to feel like I have to share all the time, I feel like it comes down to, on the one hand, I create art because I can't help myself. It's a compulsion, like breathing. Mm-hmm. Like I just like have to make stuff. On the other hand, I also want to make a difference. And, you know, sort of like I think making work has made a difference for me in a number of times. It's like therapy. And I think there's a reason why art therapy is a thing.
Yeah.
And then it's like there's this other side of the scale where I want to make a difference for people and like in the world. And I think that that's something that I've been like, I can see a lot of messaging and conditioning in my sort of upbringing to want to be that kind of person and to see that as a good kind of person, somebody that's focused on making a difference for others. I'm wondering if that impulse, like, what motivates you guys to create art as it relates to, you know, your obsessions and your feelings about sharing those obsessions? I don't know if there is a relationship for you guys.
The money.
The money.
The money. All of the money that we definitely make. And we are definitely not very, very poor artists.
Come see us over on Patreon.
And please tell me if I'm not making myself clear. I don't know if I
No, am. You are, but it is something that is just one of those, like, that's a good question, and I don't know that I have an answer for that. Because sort of, like, my brain wants to instinctively kind of be like, no, like, you need to create, like, it is compulsive for you. And it's like, is it, brain? Like, hang on a second, like, is that the real
answer? We go long periods without creating anything. Yeah, like,
is that the real answer, or is that what you want to be the real answer, brain? I think that there's a certain amount of, like, that is what the brain wants to be the real answer. And, you know, and writing is absolutely my happy place, and it is something that gives me a lot of joy and a lot of self-worth and a lot of kind of peace about myself and a lot of value. But it is also definitely something that takes a lot out of me and sort of really just is like, I definitely need to find the right wells in order to kind of fuel it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm not sure. Sarah, if you have an answer.
I'm struggling with how, like, my impulse to write relates to my obsessions and sort of how I understand obsessions. And I think that, I don't know, it's nutty, and I think I would need more time to think of the question to come up with a really good, proper answer. But I don't know, in my heart, I'm a Ravenclaw. And I love to know and understand and discover. And I find that most sublimely in writing. But I also find it in reading and watching and being able to, you know, I remember we read a book in high school when suddenly I was seeing that book in all the other books I was reading. And that's that kind of connecting your obsessions to things that are out in the world also fuels the creative impulse.
Right.
And as you say, like, my obsessions are always the well that, you know, I draw on to have the energy to create, because, whoo, boy, it's exhausting. So, like, they're bound up in an interesting, knotty way, and I don't have a really clear answer. But I think there is something creative about my obsessions, because they help me create my understanding of the world? Question mark.
Amen. Future.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks. See you next week.